You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Today on the Cooligans, we are joined by goalkeeper of Minnesota United, Tyler Miller.
That's right. We talk about what it's like to be have play for clubs that are owned by comedians, why we should maybe own Minnesota United to keep that trend going, and also a player that was smoking cigarettes and made him walk 5 kilometers, whatever that is, that and more on this episode of the Cooligans!
Hi, this is Ashlyn Harris.
And Allie Krieger. And you are listening to our best friends and favorite comedians,
the Cooligans, bitch.
Yeah, baby.
What?
I can't yell too loud. There's people home.
That's right. This is Living Room FC. It's a little bit more toned down, okay?
Yeah. We're trying to take it down a notch, will you? People are home. What's all the excitement about?
All right. Yes, hello. Welcome to the show, everybody. We are the Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco.
That's right. I'm Alexis Guerreros.
All right. We are your favorite stand-up comedians that host the funniest soccer show that you have ever seen.
And it's not just that.
Witnessed.
Oh, absolutely. It's also the gulliest, all right?
That's right.
Watch back.
Okay. It is a soccer show plus threat.
100%. I'm going to cough on everything you own, my guy.
Okay. You know what? I think Alexis took it too far.
Yeah. That's pretty usual.
No, but we're excited about today's show because we got, just a dude who we're big fans of and the goalkeeper for Minnesota United.
But also, Jersey legend, all right? Okay. You know, when we bring in Jersey, we got to talk about it, all right? And I have a feeling I'm not going to like the answer to his first question. But ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together, unless you're driving, which, by the way, you shouldn't be driving, my guy. Get home, all right? Stay home. Put your hands together for the one, the only, Tyler Miller, everybody! Come on.
Tyler, what's up, man?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
What's going on? Tyler, you're a Jersey dude, all right? So this has got to be the first question I ask. And I'm not the host, so I can't shut this off. And I have a feeling I know what you're going to say. Is it Taylor Ham or is it pork roll?
100% pork roll.
See what I'm saying? You can't trust them, okay?
I'm a Jersey guy, but I'm closer to Philly. So I rep Philly most of the time.
You just can't trust them when they're from South Jersey. Our producer just asked, what's better, pork roll or scrapple?
My dad likes scrap, but I think for my generation, I'm more of a pork roll kind of guy.
Yeah, it just doesn't even feel right me asking it that way with saying it.
It's difficult. Look, I'm currently in New Jersey. I'm in North Jersey, but I'm not from here. And Alexis has asked this question to several. He asked it to Greg Berhalter. He asked Matt Turner. And every single time, he was like, "Okay, the interview can continue." After so they answered correctly.
Me, but so we this will is very continue.
So Alexis is going to power through right now.
You know, I'm going to just not think about it. You know what I mean?
I'm going to move forward.
Yeah. Can you get Taylor Ham in Minnesota though?
I don't say I haven't really looked for it, but I don't think you can.
No.
I've heard like people who live all over the country. They say they only get it when they go back to Jersey or that area.
There's a food truck that just Derek Etienne was like, where? Somebody posted there's a food truck. Two Jersey guys opened up a food truck in Columbus, Ohio. And he's like, Derek Etienne's like, I'll go find them right now. He's also from Jersey. It's like people from Jersey just like, you don't want to eat it all the time, but you just want to smell it every once in a while.
Well,
you know,
Matt Turner, obviously goalkeeper for the New England Revolution. He was on the show recently. And he was like, go to John's famous bagels and get a Taylor Ham egg and cheese. So like a couple days ago I did it, and you know what, it's maybe my second time ever having Taylor Ham. It's fine.
It's now, fine.
I don't know what is the big deal. Why is
I'm surrounded
such a
by two people you can't trust. Wow. See, now Tyler and I are on the same team and it's against you.
Why is this such a big deal for people in New Jersey? And Tyler, please, you can answer first.
I mean, I don't know. I just think that there's certain foods that are in that area that you can't find anywhere else. So you travel, you get around, and you're just like, wow, this hits the spot. It feels like home for you almost.
Okay.
What is it? If obviously it's not Taylor Ham, but is there something for you that reminds you of home and that you're able to do like some a little bit of Jersey comfort or Philly comfort out there in Minnesota? What do? You throw batteries at your neighbors? What do you do?
So you're giving Jersey people a bad rep, you know? No, I've only thrown a battery once.
Nice.
No, I haven't done that. But for me, it's a Philly cheesesteak. Whenever I go home, like that's one of the first things I do. I land at Philly Airport, and then I go right to like Tony Luke's, a famous place in Philly, and get that on the way home.
I've had Tony Luke's. They do a broccoli rabe on one of their cheesesteaks. It's pretty fire. Yeah. I think you won an award for that. I'm a fat guy, so I know it all when it comes to food. But you obviously, look, goalkeeper, you've been around in the league for a long time. It's one of the questions we ask a lot of people. Like, what are some of the things you're doing right now to sort of stay fit or stay sane? Because you guys are so used to sort of having this specific schedule your whole life. And now, right now, it's all shot.
Yeah, it's a very unique time. And for me, the biggest thing that I'm trying to take out of all of this is, okay, I want to stay fit, but also mentally, I want to stay sharp too. And a lot of times in my off season, I'll do enough. I'll work out and stay fit, but mentally I try to turn off a little bit and find ways to distract myself. And so nobody knows how long this is going to go on. And if I can put myself in the best position so that way when we do start playing again, I'm fully focused and I'm ready to go, that I'm not burnt out, then I think that that'll be more of a successful way to go about this than killing myself, making sure I'm like training regiment, like all that stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I did want to ask, there's a lot to discuss, but one thing I want to start with is, you going to LAFC, right? You were taken, in the expansion draft. But I want to talk about your time in Seattle, cause you were behind obviously Stephen Fry. What is the situation like for being a goalkeeper and knowing your ability and knowing your skill, and really wanting to play and really wanting that starting position, but being behind a goalkeeper who's also really, really good. What's the mentality like? And, just being in that position, how difficult is it?
It's very difficult for me. I mean, I was playing every single game, everywhere I went up until that point. And when I got to Seattle, it was almost I had to learn how to be a supportive backup. Because obviously in training, I'm doing as much as I can to try and be at the level that Steph was playing at and almost play better than him on some days. And but Steph did a really good job about mentoring me in certain ways that I think was something that I'm trying to do now for the goalkeepers that I'm trying to help bring up in our own academy and our system here. Steph was great about like whenever I had questions, he was there for me to answer. And he knew that I was pushing for his position, and all I could really do was work as hard as I could. And when I got my opportunities to play, try to do as best as I can. And thankfully there, I got a crazy start. It was in the US Open Cup, and we went to PKs, and I was able to stop three PKs. And it's just kind of how it started to get my name out there a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, when you're behind someone like Stephen Fry, right? Clearly you're a great goalkeeper, right? You've been starting in a lot everywhere else you went, but how hard is it to just be supportive? Like, you know, my mind works a certain way. Maybe it's because I'm from Newark, but I'm like, you know, a little soap on the floor of the shower and I'm the starter. You know what I mean? Like, how hard is it in those moments to not like be like, hey coach, you see him mess that up? I mean, I could do better. How hard is it in those moments to be that guy that helps push someone to the next level and not just try to sort of one up them?
I think it really came full circle in the MLS final when we won my first year there. And all the goalkeepers get into a huddle and Steph says, hey, we all did this together. Even though he was playing, he acknowledged everybody's effort throughout the entire year, which I think really goes to show what it's fully about. There's only going to be one guy that ever gets to play, whether you're the starter, the natural starter, or there's an injury and you're a backup and you're playing. There's only ever going to be one guy that's on the field. And yes, you want it to be competitive, but at the end of the day, you want it to be supportive because you're going to make mistakes. The other guy's going to make mistakes. And if you're constantly going at each other and hoping that they just mess up, you're never going to have a good working relationship with that person, which I think is the ultimate way to be successful in goalkeeping, is to have a good relationship, be competitive, but at the end of the day, be supportive of that guy.
Yeah, is that why Christian hates me? Damn.
Yeah, Alexis is not the best coworker. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a good worker, but that co part seems to get in the way a lot.
I know you probably talk about this a whole bunch, and I'm sure you hate talking about it, but we have to talk about your time with LAFC and El Tráfico, right? And that first game.
I knew exactly where you're going once you said it.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, everyone. I mean, it's one of the unfortunately, it is one of the most famous goals I think we'll have ever seen. But you were the goalkeeper against LA Galaxy when Zlatan scored his first goal. And, you know, I've seen other players talking about it from LAFC, from Galaxy. And I love the you know, I love every single perspective because everybody was on a particular spot on the pitch. Everyone, you know, I've heard people say like you know, I think Steve Betashore was like, it was a foul, shouldn't have even been a shot to begin with.
But that's the way to go.
But being the goalkeeper that you know, unfortunately gives up a goal like that, and it's you know, what is your life like that day, that you know, that game, the next couple days, being a part of history, really?
Yeah. Well, I just know that clip will be around forever for the entirety of the league. So that means I'll be around forever for the entirety of the league.
That's
so
right. Yeah, dude.
But no, once he did shoot that, I was like, oh, expletive.
Yeah. Oh, you could curse.
Okay. I was like, oh, yeah. Fuck. yeah. In my mind, I thought it was a foul. Like, I'm on the side that Betashore is on, but the ref didn't call it. We pretty much just created this whole Hollywood story for Zlatan when he got to the league. And I mean, it's just, he's an amazing player. He's capable of doing incredible things. But like, I learned a lot from that because anytime that a high quality player got on the ball, then I was like, okay, they know I like to play aggressive and they might try to shoot. And players after that have tried and I've been more cautious.
Okay.
So this is something that gets said a lot, and especially whenever keepers become like analysts, it annoys me because it's terminology I don't understand, or at least I understand the terminology, but I don't get, and it's never explained. They just assume everyone was a goalkeeper their whole life. I've heard the term off his line a lot. Now, I get that when you know, sprint to catch a ball and you don't get it, right? Or to head a ball. In that moment, I heard that you were off your line. What are you supposed to do when the ball's at the halfway mark? Are you supposed to be standing and go like it's a penalty kick?
Yeah. I mean, in that moment, like, I didn't think I was really that far out of position. I think that I could have recognized the situation of where the ball fell, who it fell to, most importantly, and where I should have been positioned. Like, I could have reacted a little bit quicker and dropped back maybe a yard or two more, but who knows if that would have even made a difference?
Yeah.
Like, he hit it so pure and so clean.
Now, I scored a goal like that when I played soccer growing up. Now, I want to preface all this by saying I was wearing jean shorts at the time. We didn't take it too seriously, but they used to tell me to take long balls off the chest. And here's the thing about that. It hurts. And I said no. So what I would try to do is kick it back. And a lot of times I would miss. And people were everyone hated me. But one time I connected with it. It went over the goalkeeper's head and it went in. And my coach was like, okay, I'll never tell you again. You do that every time. So like, sometimes it works. Sometimes it hits. But that keeper was, of course, off his line. I think he was playing with like butterflies. Like, we weren't paying attention. We were kids. So like, when I hear that you're off your line, I'm like, you're a professional. You know when to sort of move back. What goes through your head when that ball comes in the air? Like, what's the first thing in your thought? You're like, why gotta be me, man? Should you fake an injury? Like, do you just grab your hammy and go down and be like, I don't know what you're talking about. I could have stopped it, but the hammy.
Oh, I question how many soccer players around the world, they like could do something and they're like, oh, no, my hand. Gotta feel a little tight. I mean, it's just like, that's my style of play, though. I like to play aggressive off the line because if I don't have to make a save, then I love it. Like, and that includes getting a cross or coming out and getting a through ball. And so, like, you can say I play off my line and that's my aggressive stance, but that's just how I like to play, and like almost like a Neuer.
And then after that game, I know you must have been obviously fired up every time another El Tráfico came up, because these series were just incredible.
Yeah.
What was the mindset going into these games, and then also Zlatan becoming this pure villain to pretty much every team, but especially LAFC.
Yeah, I mean, it was the perfect media story. You had Zlatan versus Carlos, LA versus LA. It became this big production leading up to the game every weekend. And I tried to just take it as level-headed as I could going into it, even though inside I knew, this is a big game. Like, it always felt a little bit more. And finally, in that last El Tráfico, when we beat them for the first time ever,
We were there.
It was a nice feeling.
Yeah.
That to me is the closest I've ever felt to when I was a kid and I would watch those soccer on TV, in Germany with crazy atmospheres and stuff. That match in the playoffs, the El Tráfico was out of this world. It was the closest it's ever been. And speaking of Germany, you spent a little time in, I'm going to mispronounce it, Zweibrücken.
Zweibrücken.
Zweibrücken, great.
Yeah.
spending that time, I mean, get like a normal vowel in your language, please. Everything just sounds like you're getting yelled at. Did my mother invent this language? So you spent some time in that team. What is going out to a place like Germany? What did that do for your development? And how do you think a place like Minnesota, which has an incredible atmosphere, and LAFC, how do you think those compare?
Well, going to Germany, I really didn't know anything. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what the culture would be like. I had no idea how much I would be making, anything. And
do you have an agent, dude? They gotta tell you that stuff.
I've moved on from that agent since. But I went in there and I was on a bankrupt fourth division club who had to release all of their fourth division players and replace them with seventh or eighth division players from our second team that I didn't even know we had.
Whoa.
And I was making 250 euros a month, sharing a bedroom. My roommate at the time, or my roommate that I shared the bedroom with, was a college mate at least. But then the other guy that was on the team, he was addicted to gambling, smoked several packs a day. It was
wow.
It was wild.
Was he 53 and played in the 80s?
Yeah. No, I don't want to bring his name into it. I don't even remember his name, to be honest. But there was one practice where he got so upset because the ball went out and he didn't think it went out, and he for some reason had some control in the locker room there. And he convinced everybody in the locker room not to give us a ride home. So we had to walk 5 kilometers back home.
What?
This is what I was putting up with for 6 months. That's why.
I think he was a loan shark. They owed money.
He's looking in the stands for guys he owes money to during the match. He's just ripping cools.
it was a crazy experience for me. And I was just I took so much for granted, I guess, just even having a car and being able to get around.
Yeah.
Or nice friends that would give me a ride home.
Yeah. Boy, when you came to MLS, you were like, I don't want to walk any kilometers. They're like, we don't even know what kilometers are, so you're good. We got more with Tyler Miller. We get back after this. Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. We just want to bring in with a word from one of our sponsors, us and you, and maybe even Ali Krieger.
Correct. Yes, Gully Squad has been litter than ever.
It was wild litty. In fact, some of us, people came in and said, hey, we heard you were having a party. You're going to get a ticket because of coronavirus. I said, no. It's just Gully Squad. They said, all right, well, then please continue. I'm sorry I interrupted.
Okay. And then I tipped my cap to the officer. Gully Squad has been, again, especially during this quarantine, we've spoken about how it is more than just just getting some extra content. It is becoming a very much a full-fledged community of people sharing ideas, sharing stories of comedy, everything. So you may have heard recently we did the first Gully Squad happy hour, and that wasn't even us, that was just the Gully Squad members putting that together. Shout out to Peter Peter Garcia, who had the idea initially. And
he wanted to get drunk with other members and let's go, you know?
Yeah.
And let me
yeah.
tell you something. I think it started around, what, 6 p.m. It started at 6 p.m.
Yeah.
I logged back in at like 11:30 and it was still happening.
Dude. Bro, that's how we do it. Gully Squad, bro.
Gully Squad. It ain't called Softy Squad, my guy.
Okay.
Also, how did you know my nickname in high school?
Yeah, that's the Mr. Softy Truck subscriber service.
Actually, I got it after prom. It was a really, first time drinking whiskey, it was a lot.
Yeah, you know what? I hate that it stuck, I'll be honest. Yeah, yeah. No, but if you want to, yes, the Gully Squad Happy Hour was unbelievable, and we had a special guest join us, Ali Krieger of the Orlando Pride and the U.S. Women's National Team, two-time World Cup champion, just hopping in Zoom calls with us.
Christian, how many other podcast fan group Zoom happy hours do you think two-time World Cup winners be hopping into, or someone on the cover of People Magazine?
I can't look. I'm rifling through all my paperwork. You hear right? Okay. I'm trying to get through it. I honestly cannot find anything. I have the records.
I'm trying to add it up right now, and you can hear my calculator with the page with the paper. You can hear it going. Ding. There it is. And look, it says zero. The number is zero. So you can stop rifling through all your paperwork with your what are the printer with the that all the paper was like court the like
dot attached? Matrix. Yes. Dot matrix.
Yes, your dot matrix paper. You can stop looking at it, dude.
No, but I love it. I can't let it go.
No, keep it for sure. Keep it because you need the records for 7 years for tax reasons. But what I'm saying is you can stop rifling through it for this.
Okay. We'll get through this break then. Yeah. Look, that those are some of the things that are possible if you join Gully Squad. There's a lot of fun. Not only is just cool content, but fun surprises like that. And we are actively trying to make it more than just just sending you an extra 20 minutes of a podcast a week or a month or whatever. We're trying to like offer Gully Squad members a genuinely fun experience, similarly to what we get to have. We're trying to put out something really, really fun and cool. And it's
all the stuff we would have wanted when we were just soccer fans and didn't have a podcast or a TV show.
Totally.
Like, this is what I would have loved to have been hanging out on some conference call or something like that. And all of a sudden, a two-time World Cup winner just hops on from, her backyard, just hanging out.
Sure. It would have been nice if Ronaldinho would have called from prison.
From prison, dude. Imagine we were his only phone call. Yo, how lit is that, dude? He's like, I ain't even trying to get out, dog. I just want to say what was good. I just made this phone call to say what's good.
I don't need to talk to no lawyers. Get the Gully Squad on the phone.
Ew, dog. What are my lawyers going to do? I did this shit.
All right, so please join Gully Squad. Go to soccercooligans.com and hit the join Gully Squad button. I promise you, it is as fun as these breaks. We have a good time with it, and you'll have unique experiences and really cool things, and you'll help the show grow. So please do that. Soccercooligans.com and click on join Gully Squad.
All right, and we're back with more with Tyler Miller, Minnesota United. You were talking a little bit about Zweibrücken. I don't know. Okay. I'm trying. I see it and I still, my brain's like, why are there dots? I don't know what I'm doing. Right. Which I think I'm like 1/18th German, by the way, but I have no idea how this works. You were talking a little bit about your time there. All right. So you're in the fourth division playing with eight division players. One dude is ripping cigs and not letting you and making you walk home. Seems like it's going great. But in the break, you told us they wanted to make a captain. Clearly, this guy didn't have a lot of sway in the locker room. But what else was it? Like, how was your time there? Did you at least play well?
Well, I gave up 51 goals in 13 games.
I got to be honest, Tyler, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so don't play FIFA with me because it might bring you some PTSD of your time at Zweibrücken.
We were always doomed from the beginning. And when we only scored two goals in those 13 games as well, I knew it was going to be rough. And I also
that's a hell of a differential, man.
Yeah, 49 goals. It's great. But
was your coach, it's like, all right, let's try a 10-0-0 formation.
For me, I saw it as little successes. So if we got into the locker room at halftime and it was only 1-0, 2-0, I was pretty happy.
Yeah, okay. Guys, we're doing great. We're only down 4-0 in the 90th.
But leaving, what does time there how does that affect you as a professional? Does it like stain your career, or does it like? I mean, clearly you found success and everything worked out. Yeah. Leaving that club, do you have to like, you know, your next job interview with Seattle? Is it like, look, let me explain before you look at the stats.
Here's a video of a guy smoking on the field. I can't do it all myself.
No, I was actually pretty fortunate because. I was coached by and drafted by Ziggy Schmidt, who was from Germany and understood German soccer, and he kind of knew the situation that I was getting myself into. And I think that's part of the reason why they still ended up drafting me, because he was like, oh, you're going to the fourth division, like, good luck, but we know how hard it can be.
Yeah.
And so Ziggy kind of was like playing his cards right, because he was like, okay, like, you're gonna try it, but I have a feeling that you're gonna be coming back here. And he was right. And when I was there, actually, so 2015 was just a rough year altogether for me, because I went to Germany for 6 months, came back, I signed with S2 in Seattle, played one game and won 4-0, which was my first win of that year, so I was like, really happy.
You tell the other keeper, everything will be fine, bro. At one point, you stop feeling this.
The losses all blend together. But the next day in training, I broke my thumb and was out for the rest of the year.
Jeez.
So, that was 2015 for me. But, I mean, it really put things in perspective. I got to get out there and kind of work with Steph. I was still involved in a lot of first-team training. I got to improve my feet, did a lot of passing, which obviously is an important part of my game. And I think that they saw how much I love soccer, wanted to be around the organization. And that really helps leading into that next offseason when finally I did sign with the first team of Seattle.
Go ahead,
Christian. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, because by the time the expansion draft came up, your name, you were like, everybody was just like, yo, this dude is going. He's going to be one of the first to go. And so it must be nice, even though you would be forced to leave the team that you're at, but like just to be wanted, obviously, it feels good.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the thing that in our world, it's so many times you can fall into a situation where you're there, but you don't really feel like you're wanted there. So when I went to LAFC, and it's not that I didn't feel wanted in Seattle, it's just like I knew that my opportunity was probably never going to come there if they held on to Steph.
Sure.
And so I was super thankful to Seattle for finding a way to leave me unprotected, because the year prior to that, Minnesota and Atlanta came in, and I was kind of hoping I wasn't going to be protected, because those were two teams that I felt like I could have gone to and played. But Seattle left me unprotected, and then I went to LA, which obviously was the start of my actual playing career.
That's amazing. Yeah. It's the first time I've heard someone from around Philly say they were happy to be unprotected. You know what I mean? It's rare. You don't get that a lot. You know what I mean? When it comes to how you see your career, the difference in atmosphere that you experience in Germany, when you go to a place like LAFC, brand new club, very different, right? Yeah. Tons of money, right? I don't think they allow smoking cigarettes within miles of that stadium. Everyone looked super healthy. How did that sort of change your outlook, or were you able to bring the outlook that you brought from Seattle to something like LAFC? Because it's a completely different atmosphere.
It is. And a lot of times it just came back to me reflecting. And a lot of times it would be right before the game would kick off while we're standing there hearing the national anthem. I would look up and from our field, you could see the LA skyline and then the words like Los Angeles. And I'm just like, I came from this small town of maybe 8,000 called Woodbury in Jersey. And I've been to Chicago, then Germany and Seattle, and now I'm in LA playing soccer and doing something that I love. It really like put things in perspective, and I was like, wow, like this is such an awesome experience, and I didn't take anything for granted, I don't think.
All right. And then we went to the opening, the home opener for Minnesota United last year. And it was incredible. So why is obviously, you know, to a lot of people, I think the move from L.A. to Minnesota was a bit of a shock. But you're also going to a club that's on the rise. Speaking of atmosphere, it's another incredible atmosphere there. What's been your first impressions of Minnesota and playing there?
I've loved it so far. The coaching staff here has been really supportive of me, working with Stuart Kerr, our goalie coach. He's been great, phenomenal. He's instilled a lot of confidence in me, which is something that I think I struggled with the last 6 months of being in LA.
Mostly Zlatan's fault, obviously.
I mean, he's good, but he's not that good. It was a much needed change for me, and coming to Minnesota, where again I felt like I was wanted, and it just opened up a new kind of mindset for me that I could feel like I can go out there and play and relax and actually like enjoy soccer again.
Yeah. It's different because it's like sort of you're put in this position where it's another newish team, right? Yeah. So like you're going into a place that still doesn't really have, like, although Minnesota has existed for a long time before they were in MLS, they don't necessarily have like their culture exactly figured out as what they're going to be like in MLS. So it's got to be cool to sort of be able to walk in and kind of be like, I'm going to be, if I do well, if I do like one big thing well here, I'm a legend here, you know? Maybe that's just the way I think.
I wouldn't consider myself a legend anywhere.
Come on, man. I consider myself a legend everywhere, and I'm not. So we balanced each other out.
That's the difference between the North Jersey confidence and the South Jersey confidence.
Just a tail of ham, my guy.
Okay, you can't have Taylor Ham and also have humility. It doesn't right. come.
I think Taylor put his name in it in the North. You know what I mean? Like, it's all about self-promotion.
We did get a question from, we have a Gully Squad, which are like our more dedicated fans. And asked, we got a question from Will Galvez, and he did ask, do you feel like you have big boots to fill now that Vito Manone isn't around? And that was like, you know, there was, will he or won't he leave? And then, when that didn't work out, you got there. Is there any pressure there?
You know, I was happy Vito left because it opened the door for me to come here.
Good. Oh.
That's the business side of things that a lot of people don't understand. Vito, obviously, he had a good season last year and won goalkeeper of the year. But I don't really feel any pressure to fill his shoes because I know the goalkeeper that I am, and Vito and my game are completely different. And so like, I know that what I bring to the table is not going to be the same thing that he's bringing to the table, but I know that what I can do is good enough that it can help our team succeed and be successful.
All right. We are here still with Tyler Miller, goalkeeper for Minnesota United. And Tyler, I did want to ask because amongst some of the clubs that you've played at, you had very interesting owners in Seattle, specifically Seattle Sounders and LAFC. We're both comedians. You, one of your owners in Seattle were Drew Carey of a bunch of stuff. Whose Line Is It Anyway? The Drew Carey Show, a bunch of shows. And also LAFC had Will Ferrell as one of the owners. So look, clearly I think there's a possibility for at least Alexis and I to possibly own a team one day. I mean, who knows, that might be for the future. Right. But what is it like? Okay, cool. We got agreement.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I hear my lawyer in the background.
But being a part of clubs like that and being, you know, working with very famous comedians like that, is that interesting? Is it fun? Do you get starstruck anytime?
I would say that, like, with Drew Carey, like, I obviously had seen him a lot, and he was on, I believe it was The Price Is Right.
Yeah, he is the host of The Price Is Right.
Host of The Price Is Right. And, like, I've always, like, seen him, and we joked about, like, wanting to get him on that show because it would be so much fun to be able to be a part of that. And then when I went to L.A., Will Ferrell was my favorite actor growing up, and watching all of his movies from Step Brothers to Kicking and Screaming, like, all that stuff. And you see him on the field, and like, I'm in awe of, like, oh my god, like, it's Will Ferrell, like, he's like, right here.
He's meandering around.
He's this humble guy that like, you really see like how much they have to tap into those roles of the acting jobs that they do.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, because I will say like this, a lot, especially a lot of comedic actors that especially that have a lot of like range. I mean, we're around comedians all the time, and people think like, oh, you're friends with that person, like that must be awesome. And it's like, no, when you were around them, they're like super monotone and weird.
If we're not on stage with them, you get them in the green room when they're like worried about their mortgage. You know what I mean? It's different.
Completely different lifestyles. Yeah. But like, Will, like everybody that I've worked with, my owners, they've always been like super nice, super helpful. And Drew Carey, when my family was struggling with some cancer, like finance issues, donated $5,000 to that.
Oh, wow.
So incredible.
It shows that like they actually do care about their players and how they're doing.
That's amazing.
On a personal level. Yeah.
That's amazing to hear. I guess so. You've played for two clubs that are owned by comedians. What comedian owns Minnesota United? How do we not know about this? And I guess do they want to make us honorary owners just to keep this trend going? You know?
I think we might be missing a comedian in Minnesota, so I think you guys might be in line.
Let's go.
Okay.
Yeah, you accept PayPal.
So, you know, obviously you didn't get to play too many games so far this year with Minnesota United, but the you know, like we've had Ike Opara on the show, and clearly it's nice to be paired with the defender of the year, two-time defender of the year. Ike's a great dude. We've had him we had him on the podcast, but also listen to his podcast with Benny and Sal. Getting to work with just like high quality defenders like that, how much easier does it make your job? And is there any even when you have a high quality defender, do you still have to communicate as much, or is it like, man, this guy just gets it and makes my job a lot easier?
Yeah, no. When it came down to deciding like which team I wanted to go to in the MLS, I had a couple options, and Minnesota, it was like a no-brainer for me because I was like, I have the opportunity to work with Michael Boxall and Ike Opara and the other defenders, and I was just like, there's a reason that they had such a good year last year, and it's their defense. But with them, I think it's the expectation that you're going to communicate almost more, because that's kind of the level that they hold it to. They hold it to, you're going to communicate, but you're going to communicate in a precise manner, that it's not just random words being thrown out that mean nothing. It's actually concise and something that is useful to them. But there is an understanding that throughout the game, I won't have to tell them the little details of, oh, sliding into this position or getting across. They kind of just understand that. But when it comes into those high pressure moments, that's when they need to rely on me the most.
Okay.
It's always interesting to see the communication between the keeper and the back line. When you hear things like Thiago Mota famously said he wishes that his goalkeeper was more like a midfielder, which sounds insane to anyone else, right? Do you think you're like, I could do it? Like, yo, let me bring the ball up a little bit sometimes. Like, do you, I mean, especially now that you're playing FIFA, right? Like, you're controlling so much more on the field. You're like, this was what I should have been doing. Why am I standing back there? I got the feet, baby.
You know? People are going to see how I really want to play when I play FIFA, because I'm going to be dribbling.
it's all that right wheel. You're just like, man, he's got skill moves out the wazoo.
Trick stick, juggling, all that stuff.
Yeah, dude.
Hell yeah. But,
no, it's I think it's just a unique position because we're the only ones on the field that can see the entire field at every time. And so like we know like where people are, where the best way for the ball to go is. And I personally love having the ball at my feet. It's one of my favorite things in the game. And getting to find that pass that either opens up the team or the attacker's coming and he doesn't expect you to cut it back on him and making a pass. And then you see that like angst from them of disbelief almost.
So I have another question. This is another question from a Gully Squad member, Landon Cottom. He said, and I'll just preface it. We had Jim Curtin on the show, head coach for the Philadelphia Union, who played under Bob Bradley. And he told us some really, really fun stories about what it was like in, you know, basically in the 90s being coached by Bob Bradley for the Chicago Fire. Can you add any comparison between Bob Bradley's coaching style and Adrian Heath's?
Yeah, I mean it's very they're very different styles. I would say that Bob is very minute, every single detail he's gonna hammer out and make sure guys know while giving guys still some freedom to play and creativity on the field. Whereas Adrian, he's not so much worried about the every single detail of the game because he understands that it has ebbs and flows, and he picks the team and has a lot of confidence in the team. And that's something that he instills every day, and every pregame speech, he instills a lot of confidence. And he tells us, like, look, we don't know if we're going to win or lose, but you go out there and you have to just give your full effort, and that's all you can really control. So he's more about control the controllables and put your full effort out there and just let the game take care of itself.
Whose accent is harder to hear while yelling? Is it Adrian Heath or Bob Bradley's Jersey accent? Which one's harder to understand?
They're both pretty difficult.
Because I know what I sound like when I'm upset, and it just sounds like I'm in the middle of chewing a sandwich. You know what I mean? It's that Jersey accent can't go nowhere.
Yeah, but there is, Bob is, notoriously intense, and yeah. it isn't that it doesn't, that it doesn't breed any success. But I can imagine. I mean, I'm not saying that it's off-putting, or some people it can resonate better with some people over others. But
I would love to see Will Ferrell mess with him a little bit. That would blow my mind to watch. Just because Bob ain't gonna get the joke.
he laughs along though. He laughs along, but I think Bob can take it.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you this. This was another thing that was brought up to us from our Gully Squad. But Chad Benty, he said, ask him about the Rambo video. Okay. This was, if people didn't see this, maybe we could probably even playing it right now, who knows. You're quarantined and you were figuring out the best way to process all of that, and you made an amazing home Rambo video.
Yeah, I woke up one morning and I was just like, all right, I have Nerf guns, what can I do to entertain myself? And
just you and 13-year-old children at home are all waking up the same way. What do we do with all these Nerf guns?
You get locked in your tiny apartment for a long time and you come up with crazy things.
Yes.
At one point, it started from me shooting at Jenga blocks and knocking them out. Create a game like that. But then I was like, okay, I can make this like cool video, like put it to some epic music. And I was like looking in my closet, and then I came across this camo jumpsuit, and I was like, oh, I can like do like a Rambo edition.
Just came across this random camo jumpsuit.
Just me, my dog, my Nerf guns, and my camo jumpsuit.
That clearly everyone has. It came with the apartment, to be
everybody
honest.
Everybody got that. Every Minnesota apartment gets one. So
you move to Minnesota, you get a camo jumpsuit.
Yeah, that's true.
Part of the deal.
No, it's good. At least you can be humorous and let loose. Yeah. Obviously, during a difficult time, but it was pretty funny. That was
my goal. My goal was like, okay, I can have fun making it, but I can also like have fun and give people something to laugh at.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, that's what we're hoping to do as well. We got a question from Mike Thomas, who's another Gully Squad member. He said, goalies stand right in front of supporters pretty often, hopefully every time. So what are the worst, best goalkeeper heckles that you've ever heard?
I'm able to block out a lot of that stuff. But I always have appreciation for the ones that make me laugh. Because I hear everything, and I'm not going to sit here and be like, no, I like so focused that I don't hear everything, because there's a lot of stuff that I do hear. But I can't think of anything right off the top of my head right now, but I always show appreciation, and I give the supporters like a little wink or a clap or a thumbs up when I want to hear something. Like my first game back in Seattle, they started a whole chant where it was like, Stephen Fry taught you everything you know.
Yeah.
Like, all right. Like, I gave him a clap for that. I was like, I that one like got me. I thought it was pretty funny and unique.
Yeah, that's pretty dope. Cause you're so close. I know you have to hear it, but a lot of goalkeepers have been like, I don't even know they're back there. It's like, bruh, they're yelling your name 16 feet away from you.
Because I've also seen like the clips of like Tim Howard really hearing what everybody said and flipping.
they can get under your skin, and it takes some true like just resilience to not like freak out on people. But that just comes with the sport. That's like you gotta in the position itself, especially after you have a bad goal, you hear everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeez.
One thing I've always been curious about, and this might be a very specific question, but in Sporting Kansas City, whenever you give up a goal, they throw the confetti.
Confetti,
and
yeah.
Then the confetti stays all over the ground.
Oh, yeah.
While you're still playing, is that distract? Can you actually slip? Is it a big deal, or how does that even, does it affect your game at all?
I don't think you can slip on it, but it's there and you notice it. Like, you notice, I walk the field before every game to try to see what each like goal mouth is like, the 18, and I pick up on little things and I'm like, okay, I have to look out for this in the game. And if a guy's coming down and something catches my eye there just for a slight second, like, it can throw me off and I can be in a wrong position or react late to a shot. So it's definitely a distraction for my timing and my eyesight.
Okay.
When you're getting ready for a penalty kick, on your end, I see a lot of goalkeepers. They walk to one side, they touch the pole, they walk to the other side, they touch the pole. You know how big the goal is, okay? That hasn't changed. What's happening there?
Oh, they're just trying to play games. They're trying to slow down the shooter's momentum as much as they can.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times when attackers practice PKs, they have a rhythm that they like to go through. And if you can disrupt that at any moment, any time, you're hoping that gives you like a little bit of a competitive edge.
We were talking a little bit about penalty kicks. You mentioned in your first start, you stopped three of them, right?
Yeah.
I've seen it where like the water bottle has like, this guy goes left, this guy goes right. What happens in that moment? Are you really thinking that? Or sometimes there's players behind you pointing each way. Like, there was a video when Pirlo played for NYCFC where he pointed to one direction and that player went to that and helped the keeper stop it. Are you focusing on those things, or do you have in your head like, I saw him look this way, that's the way he's going to go? Or is it just instinctual? When that foot hits the ball, you jump. Like, what happens for you specifically in that moment?
There's so much that goes into it. I mean, you can do scouting reports and all that stuff on shooters, but a lot of times the shooters know that you do scouting reports. So sometimes they change it up, but then sometimes will they change it up or will they not change it up? It's like a mental mind game. And if you get too drawn into it all, then like, you can kind of like screw yourself. I think it really just comes down to confidence. And a lot of times I try to rely on my instincts and I see players pointing and I'm like, you have no idea where this guy's going to go.
Like, you know, you're yelling at your own player.
Even if you do get it right, it's like, okay, you had a 50-50 shot just like I did.
Yeah.
And now players like go down the middle. So it's like, okay, like reading the situation, like what minute is it in the game? How's that player been playing? Is he confident? I think there's so much that goes into it, but I try to just take what I know and what I'm good at and just read it, and I go as hard as I can. And if I save it, I save it. If I don't, then I don't. I mean, there's no pressure on me there, but like I try to use every little bit of knowledge that I can to give myself the best opportunity.
Does it ever get like upsetting sometimes to be bested in that scenario? Like, I know we're NYCFC fans, and whenever we watch Alejandro Pozuelo from Toronto FC take a penalty against Sean Johnson, I'm just like, why? I understand that he might score, but why does he have to embarrass him? Okay, yeah. I get angry. I feel bad.
Those are the moments that are hard. It's just like, that's just how it goes, though. You don't really feel bad. It's like in your head, you create this scenario. It's like, oh, I just made the save and I helped our team and we won the game like 90th minute, like those types of scenarios. But I'm hoping that I don't have to face a PK in that minute.
Yeah, yeah.
But I try not to let myself get too caught up in giving up a goal in general, because they're going to happen. That's part of the position.
Yeah.
You know how hype keepers get when they stop a penalty? You know what I mean? Maybe not during PKs, but like during the game, there's a penalty. You know how hype y'all get? Do you ever look around and your defender's like, you ain't done shit. Of course I got to do it all.
It's all me.
I got to do everything. You want me to drive the bus back? You ever get like, is that the zone you get in?
No, I don't get hyped, honestly. Like, no? I make a save and I'm like, all right, I did my job. Like,
hey, at the office for my guy.
Yeah, it's just like another thing. Because like, that's your expectation. That's why you get paid to do what you do.
Yeah.
And so like, it's like, you make a good save. It's like, okay, cool. Like, you can go and fuck up the next play.
Yeah. What is the and speaking of that, like, what is the in MLS in general? You've been at a couple different clubs. The level of, like, because one thing when we talk about American soccer, we always feel like there isn't enough flair and style and like just flexing on people. Yeah. Well, it has have you seen any change throughout the years, especially as a lot more foreign players bring in their culture? Are you know, during rondos, are people trying to nutmeg more, or is it like, what has been that sort of, has there been any kind of like more flair added to the league as it's grown and become a little bit more flashy?
100%. I think that every training session you see someone pulling off something where you're like, wow, like that's impressive. And that kind of thing they do in practice then translates to the games, and you see like these goals that are being scored that you might not have seen in the last like 15 years or so. But yeah, now the influx of foreign players who are then having an effect on American players, because they're bringing what they have, but they're also showing these American players a new style of playing, a new idea, a new creativeness that they can bring into their own game. And so I think it's a benefit to have these players that come from a different culture, a different style of football, to then come to America where we're so ground and pound and fight to the very end. And yeah, I find a different way to play the game, and it's exciting.
Right, talking about like international flair, like when Mason Toy brings his flair from Essex County, New Jersey. You know what I mean? When he brings that swag with him, you know?
That's all ground and pound in there.
All right, thank you so much for joining us, everyone, viewers, and Tyler. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time, Tyler. Is there anything you want to promote or say or let people know about you?
Yeah, no, I appreciate you guys having me on. And to end, sure, I'd really just like to send my deepest, sincere gratitude to all of the essential workers out there who are sacrificing family time and taking the risks to help us get through this pandemic and everything that you've been doing. Myself, my family, and all the players here at Minnesota United are extremely grateful for everything that you've done.
Thank you, man. Thank you for that.
Well said. So thank you so much again for joining us. Tyler, we usually end the show by yelling the Cooligans into the screen. It'll be a fun thing. We do it with everyone, I promise. So again, make sure you follow us at Soccer Cooligans, at Fubo Sports, and subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. So with that said, for Tyler Miller, my name is Christian Polanco.
And I'm Alexis Guerreros.
And together, what are we?
The Cooligans!
Yes, nailed it.